Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's All of It. My name is Ilya Meritz, in today for Allison Stewart. And the Supreme Court wrapped up its term today with some pretty momentous decisions, not only on Trump business records, but also on American Indians and treaties with the United States government in Oklahoma. So let's review this whole term with WNYC legal editor and our host of All Things Considered, Jamie Floyd. Jamie, hi.
Hello. Good to be with you.
It's great to hear your voice. First, I have to ask your reaction to the two cases that were decided on Trump business records today. They are Trump v. Mazars and Trump v. Deutsche Bank and Trump v. Vance. One of them was about the power of the House of Representatives to subpoena business records concerning the man who is now the president. The other one, Trump v. Vance, is about Cy Vance Jr., our district attorney in New York, and his effort to get Trump business records for part of a criminal probe. Both cases were decided 7-2. Chief Justice Roberts wrote the decision in both of those cases, and both cases had dissents from Justices Alito and Justice Thomas. What's your top line reaction?
Well, I want to hear your reaction too. As our
Trump you'll hear it.
Inc. host, yes, because you have a lot of background and repertorial experience in this very area, Ilya. But I guess we should lay the groundwork first for those who may not be as enmeshed in these facts and this law as we are. So, as you say, Ilya, these are two cases that were consolidated. They both involve President Trump's taxes and his other financial matters. The first grows out of the criminal investigation by District Attorney Cyrus Vance and the grand jury in New York, which had issued a subpoena not specifically to President Trump, but to creditors of President Trump and his businesses, several business entities, for private financial records belonging to the president over a period between 8 and 10 years, depending on which organization was targeted. And the grand jury was looking into wrongdoing, which all started after President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, yes, let's think back to that, testified that he had helped to pay women who allegedly had had affairs with Donald Trump to keep them quiet during the 2016 campaign. So now we're going back to the last campaign cycle.
And right. So it is, to clarify, yeah, it is pre-presidential actions.
Absolutely.
But very, very close very to important. The time when he took office, but it is pre-presidential.
Yes, and as far as we know, it could go back, depending on what Cyrus Vance is looking into. This is grand jury investigation, so it's confidential, but it could go back well before that. But up to the time that Michael Cohen testified about the hush money payments allegedly made to keep these women quiet during the 2016 campaign, and presumably much more. And Vance had argued that the president does not have across-the-board immunity for behavior, as you say, Ilya, not related to his official duties. President Trump sued to stop the release of the records, and then it made its way up to the appellate courts. And here in the Southern District of New York, a 75-page unanimous ruling in the appellate court here said that the investigation should move forward. The judge writing that, yes, there are some constitutional questions raised, but Judge Marrero here calling the president's efforts to block the subpoena, quote, repugnant to the nation's governmental structure and constitutional values. So then we get to the Supreme Court and Trump's personal lawyers continuing to say that the nation needs his attention. He shouldn't be bothered with this investigation. And then the Justice Department weighs in too, siding with the president in the Supreme Court. And there we have it. That's where we stood today when the opinion dropped in the Vance case. That's right. Not even the congressional case.
So that was the more clear-cut case.
And even
in oral arguments, it seemed that the justices were leaning this way.
Yeah.
And they seemed to accept the view that a local law enforcement grand jury process would afford a president all the protections that he needs, just like any normal citizen. Mm-hmm. The thornier case is the case of the, I believe, three House committees or subcommittees that were all seeking various kinds of business records from Donald Trump, his family, and his company, the Trump Organization. And lest our listeners forget, let me remind you that Donald Trump is the first president, or certainly the first president in many, 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 many decades to retain a private business interest while in office. So that's
yes.
a key reason why the House was investigating this stuff in the first place.
And to not turn over his taxes. Since Jimmy Carter started doing that, those many years ago, part of the reason these investigations are ongoing is we don't have a public record of his tax filings.
And the majority opinion by Chief Justice Roberts really seemed, in my reading, to really want to try to split the baby and say, there are competing interests here. They are both valid. Congress has an interest in doing an investigation if it is tied to potential legislation. And the president has an interest in his ability to be the chief executive and not be responding to all kinds of subpoenas that may not be warranted. And he actually laid out some standards that a court could apply in trying to decide on this subpoena or in subpoenas in the future. Do you want to walk us through that standard?
Right. So just to clarify, as you've said, the first opinion, the Vance opinion, and the first case, the Vance case, Trump v. Vance, was the clearer case going in and the clearer opinion coming out. It was 7-2. It was not unanimous. And we can talk a little bit about previous presidential cases. There aren't many that have made it to the U.S. Supreme Court. They've been unanimous. So this is a bit of a disappointment, I would imagine, for Chief Justice Roberts. I don't like to try and get into the head of the justices, but I'll do it in this case. I thought this would be unanimous. And so that says something about the nature of the court these days. But it was a clearer opinion, and his tone was strong. It was rooted in sturdy constitutional principles. He begins with this line: in our judicial system, the public has a right to every man's evidence. And he goes on to say that Article 2, the executive branch article in our Constitution, which summarizes the function and powers of the president, nor the Supremacy Clause, which talks about relative federal state power, neither of those gives the president absolute immunity from Cyrus Vance or any district attorney who would be investigating in this manner. And he writes, quote, we cannot conclude that absolute immunity is necessary or appropriate under Article 2 or the Supremacy Clause. So this is a very important and clear opinion. And then he finishes by saying, look, the president is free to avail himself of the constitutional protections available to ordinary citizens in the criminal process. And with that in mind, the Southern District case can proceed. But you're right, Ilya, the congressional case is a little more complicated. There, too, he says Congress can proceed, but they do have to jump through the hoops to which you refer.
So what happens next in the congressional subpoenas?
Well, they have to go back down to the lower courts. And what Justice Roberts did there, also a 7-2 opinion, but he rather complains that there have been, I shouldn't say he complains, we don't want too many cases where presidents are coming up to the U.S. Supreme Court under subpoena, but he notes that there have only been, there's been about one case per century since our founding, and so he doesn't have a lot of precedent. So he writes a four-part test, and he says, look, Congress has the right, it's very clear. I think the most important thing to note in the congressional case, the important takeaway, Ilya, is that the court does not find that Congress oversteps. He rejects the heightened standard that the president's attorneys had argued would be necessary for congressional subpoenas of a president. But he does say that Congress failed in this case to really adequately account for the significant separation of powers concerns raised by congressional subpoenas of any president. And so he lays out a four-factor test that they need to meet in the Mazars case, Mazars being the accounting firm that is named in the case, and they need to go back to the federal district courts in this case, in the D.C. Circuit and Second Circuit here, and meet this test. And basically, it's a balancing test. Do you really need the stuff? Is it a partisan? I don't want to use that word witch hunt. Oh my goodness, it's been ruined. But you have to prove to the court that you aren't on a fishing expedition. You have to prove to the court that you really need it. You have to prove to the court that this is something significantly important for your work. And the four-factor test is really clearly laid out. And then he concludes by saying, it's a shame that we don't have more precedent. So I'm just going to write this test and get back to work and you can come back here if you need to and prove that you've met the four factors.
Here, I wrote a standard for you. So in effect, this gets kicked down now to a lower court, and it means that the House of Representatives and the American public probably won't see these
That's
financial
right.
records before the election.
Well, right. And so, you know, I was discussing this earlier with Andrea Bernstein, our colleague, your co-host on Trump Inc. Plug.
Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Start listening now.
Or wherever you get podcasts. I see these two cases as short-term wins for President Trump, but long-term wins for our democracy. In the end, by November, we're not going to see these financial records. The Vance case proceeds in the grand jury, which is a secret proceeding. It moves on. He was not able to quash that subpoena. And the Supreme Court very clearly states that this president and no president is immune from investigation in a state court. That is terrific for the rule of law, but we're not going to see anything that Cyrus Vance is working on or his successor, should he, not seek or win re-election before Donald Trump leaves office.
Right, because grand jury proceedings
really
do not leak. Different to Congress. Congress leaks information all the time.
Exactly.
We would only see the findings if a case is eventually brought
if there's
against
an indictment.
Some party, if there's an indictment, and then if evidence is offered at trial.
Exactly.
And that would be a long, long time from now.
Yeah, presumably after Donald Trump leaves office, even if he's reelected. And in Congress, as you suggest, Ilya, we're going to have a new Congress in short order. So the process will have to start all over again to issue new subpoenas. So it's a short-term win for Donald Trump, but I think the rule of law in our country matters so very much. And these two cases, though not unanimous, establish a very important precedent as to presidential subpoenas. And they're consistent with the prior cases, Nixon. And, if you like precedent, this is a terrific opinion to read. Hamilton's in there. Burr is in there. Nixon, Clinton. I mean, there's a lot of good, stuff in there if you're a presidential historical buff. You want to read them. It's only 18 pages. It's pretty good.
Do you think the next court to hear the congressional subpoena cases is going to find it straightforward to apply Roberts's four-factor test here? I'm going to just go over what that is again.
Yeah.
One, assess whether the request is merited under a stated legislative purpose. Mm-hmm. Two, to insist that the subpoena is narrow, no broader than necessary. Three,
right.
Congress should explain how the evidence advances the legislative purpose. And four, to consider the burdens on the president. I thought he had an interesting choice of words here, from a rival political branch.
Right.
Sort of acknowledging the political point scoring that can happen in these kind of situations. Is that test going to be something that a judge or judges feel that they can apply in a very straightforward way, calling balls and strikes?
Right. And it's funny that you use that expression, calling balls and strikes, because Justice Roberts so often references his vision of himself. Yeah, I do see what you did. His vision of himself as an umpire in a baseball game. Well, Ilya, he then in the very next paragraph concludes by saying, quote, other considerations may be pertinent as well, but with one case every two centuries, that does not afford enough experience for an exhaustive list. In other words, he's saying we are forced here to make our own precedent because there's not a lot to work with. We have Nixon, we have Clinton, and before that, there was the Burr Jefferson case, which really didn't make a lot of precedent because in the end, Jefferson just turned over the materials. And that's it. So, to answer your question, I'm not trying to dodge. I think it's workable. I think it's a workable standard. It's not as clear cut as some other areas of law, but what really is the Miranda test has been chipped away. I mean, I could work through all of those things we think of as clear cut areas of law precedents that we should apply clearly, Roe versus Wade. I mean, we argue over these things for decades, and they need to be fought for or rethought. And this seems like a place to start. The real question here is not whether or not we have a good four-factor test. The question here is whether or not Congress has power to subpoena when it sees fit. And congressional power is balanced against executive power. And the court, as the third branch, has spoken. So we have an appropriate balance of power amongst our three branches. That, I think, is the important takeaway.
I've been speaking with WNYC host and legal editor Jamie Floyd, also host of All Things Considered. Jamie, I imagine you'll be talking about all this and more on All Things Considered later today.
I will, but as a guest, Sean Carlson is hosting, and Andrea and I will be on as guests.
Okay, well, so you'll want to tune in at 4. Thank you for joining us, Jamie Floyd. Always great talking to you.
A pleasure to hear your voice, Ilya.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.